This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
A lot of work has finally started into the mental health of our veterans. But how often have you heard a mother, a sibling, or a partner say they came back from war a different person?
It's just such a common story, Rish. Good morning. Today we're talking about the impact war has not just on the soldier, but on the families and partners, because many partners and children have tried to hide the impacts war has had on their family for years.
Yeah, I know. And many families actually suffer alone, and whether that be through nightmares, aggression, depression, anxiety, maybe just simply shutting down, PTSD and suicidal thoughts of the men and women who return from war.
So when someone returns from a conflict, a different person, as you say, Rish, how does that impact on those who love and those who care for them?
So what is the impact of war on partners and children of veterans?
Has a loved one returned from conflict, and how did it affect you?
On ABC Radio, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
And a lot of today's program is inspired by a book, and we'll meet the author a little later, Jono. But the title is actually what grabbed us, and it was just When He Came Home, The Impact of War on Partners and Children of Veterans. And so often throughout our lives, whether it be a grandparent or a parent or a friend that says they just came back a different person. And you're so right in what you said at the beginning, that many people find ways to try and hide that, you know, to try and hide that from family members, from society, from the school, from friends, from whoever it may be.
Yeah, yeah. And part of that is, I guess, the way we look at men and the way we look at soldiers and the way we look at returned service people as well, and the stereotypes there. So Heather Evans can tell us more about this. She's National President of Partners of Veterans Association of Australia. G'day, Heather. This is such a huge issue.
Good morning. Yes, it is. It's, as you say, it's been hidden for a very long time, and I think for the Vietnam veteran era, we had our fathers, most of whom went to the war and came home and were lauded and applauded and treated as a normal human being, whereas our men came home and they hid it, and it became part of your life to not tell people, because you felt guilty that this man had gone and fought for his country, and you felt guilty that he wasn't coping, and you felt you weren't coping. You felt it was your fault in a lot of cases.
How is that slowly changing, Heather, or is it not? When we're talking about support for those that are caring for veterans and I guess are seeing day in, day out the trauma that can occur when you return home from conflict, is it changing? Is the support for those people at home better now?
I'd like to say yes. It's changed. There's acceptance that you may come home, as you said before, a different person. But I don't think there's a lot of rhetoric, and there's a lot of stuff. But I think you need to talk. The government, the DVA, whoever needs to speak with the women themselves or the men, the partners and the families in depth, and say, what do you need? I mean, if you've been married to a serviceman, you've moved around for years, you haven't got a career. You haven't had a job for too long. You move every couple of years. And your children are moved all the time. And you can make that an adventure, but it really isn't an adventure in the end. I think that the families need to be listened to more seriously.
Yeah, and just listening to you speak, Heather, I'm in Sale, and we've got an RAAF base here, and there are so many families around this area that are defence families, and every couple of years they'll, you know, pick everything up and move off to the next defence base, and so it goes on. It must be so hard. But how are you going, and how are other families of veterans going? Because there has been so many negative stories about the SAS in the media. We've got the Special Investigator for War Crimes coming online, the withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan, and then you've got, you know, the Taliban taking control in Afghanistan. How are you going?
I'm fine. But I think a lot of the men, particularly young servicemen, younger men, have thought, what did I go to Afghanistan for? And we can equate with that because quite a lot of men came home and thought, what the hell was I doing there? Why was I there? Where's the brass band? Where's the welcome and where's the thanks? You know, I think a lot of, and with COVID on top of it, I think a lot of people would be suffering that feeling that, you know, why did I give up? Why did I lose friends? Why did I put my family through that? Why did I? And so if they are feeling like that, naturally the impact is on the family.
Heather Evans is with you, the National President of the Partners of Veterans Association of Australia. Brett's called. He's in Albury, Wodonga. Brett, welcome. What did you want to say?
Yeah, look, I'm an ex-serviceman. I served in Afghanistan a couple of times in East Timor. And I'm just ringing just to let you know that basically, you know, I've put a lot of pressure on my family, you know, with coming out and having, you know, PTSD and physical injuries and depression and everything like that. And the toll that it's taken on my wife and children are really, it's extreme, if you know what I mean. But I think for me, it was more the point that I got to a point where I thought I'd beaten the system. And then I say the good old wife gave me a good kick up the you-know-what and told me to go get help. Pretty much put a line in the sand, and it was a big wake-up call for me. And look, I look back on that. That's about 6-7 years ago now. And I got myself into I call it a nut house. That's just my slang of it all. And it was the best thing that I did because I got myself into a hospital down in Melbourne where it wasn't just for the defence, but it was like the full community. So you had it from all aspects, not just in the bubble.
Yeah, well, good on you, Brett, for getting help. I mean, that's the first step, and that's such an important step. But when you say, I mean, you're talking about the pressure that your PTSD had put on your family. What do you mean by that?
Well, just my mood swings. In the end, my wife could tell me when I was about to go into a what would you call like a PTSD moment, you know, days beforehand. And I'd tell her that she was, you know, full of it sort of thing. But in saying that, look, I married a strong woman. I joined as a married man with two young kids that were about 2 years and 18 months.
Gosh, they were young then when you
yeah,
went.
Yeah, so we've done the full move right around Australia. And, you know, I heard one of the other callers say, you know, you make a bit of an adventure between, you know, postings and everything like that. But my career got taken from me because my knees went on me in the end. I've got two brand new knees, you know, and it's the best thing that I did. I lost my career at 38 because I wanted to stay as an instructor for my corps because I had done it for 13 years, but they wouldn't let me because you had to be ready deployed.
And so, that's such a big part of it. Brett, thank you so much for sharing your story. But when you leave conflict or where you leave, wherever you are posted, you're generally like Brett. You come back and you're still super young. And the identity that is wrapped around serving kind of disappears as well. Brett, thank you so much. And thank you for letting us know that you reached out to get help as well.
And good luck, Brett.
That's another really good advertisement for marrying strong women as well. And gee whiz, Brett's wife would have to be strong to go through all of that.
She might have started out very strong, but she would have got that strength. She would have had to.
Yes, yeah. Is that how you feel, Heather, that you kind of plotted that course as well?
Yes, I do. I know that. I was very young when we got married. We got married within 6 months of Cliff coming home from Vietnam. And I just assumed that the lovely, smiling, happy, blue-eyed, gorgeous hunk that went was the same person that came out. And you, with the family as well, once the family comes along, you have to find that strength somewhere because in a lot of ways, a man affected by his service doesn't have the strength to deal with a lot.
And I think as a society, we're only just starting to change too in being able to see it as a sign of strength to reach out for help, whether it be the person that's returned or for the partner that's at home. You know, it felt like you were, as you said earlier, Heather, it felt like you were doing the right thing by keeping it hidden. And that's something that's slowly changing. There's a text here that says, I'm the youngest daughter of a Vietnam veteran. He's now 78, but looks like he's 90. He was severely impacted by his career in the army, which has bled through my life and is now impacting watching his grandchildren. His mental and physical health is terrible, and often my auntie says before he left, he was a different man. It's hard to hear when I didn't get the chance to meet that man. It runs through the generations, Heather, doesn't it?
It certainly does, and I think you're correct about people seeking help, and it isn't just, there's no stigma attached. Very little now. People are applauded for looking, being sensible enough to get some help. But veterans have had to fight for that for years, and we're still looking for some sort of a card for the partners so that they're covered for mental health. It's gone to the commission. It's gone everywhere, and we had massive support, but it didn't. No response.
Well, maybe that'll come up in this Royal Commission, which
I doubt it, because it's already been that. We were just told there's VVCS, or Open Arms as it's now called, but we really believe that the strength the man needs is getting it from his family in most cases, and therefore her strength is, you know, at breaking point in a lot of cases. And I don't think it matters which war it is. It's not a generational thing. I mean, the attitude is a different thing, but the effects are exactly the same.
Yeah. Anne is in Ascot Vale. Morning, Anne. What's your story?
Yes. Hi. Good morning. Yes. I've married to a Vietnam vet. He actually, today's 2 months since he passed away. Of cancer. What I found very frustrating is throughout our time together, the 30 years, it was very difficult dealing with DVA. I think it's just very hard to navigate that system, and it was just very difficult. He was discharged from hospital. I explained he was with DVA. They said they couldn't get me a nurse to help. So I took him home, and he was very ill, and after ringing around the community, the hospital said that DVA doesn't have a contract with community nursing, so they couldn't help me when I was discharged. Then when I rang DVA, I think I had to get him back into hospital to get a proper discharge, so I got him readmitted into hospital for a few hours.
Gosh, just navigating that system, Anne. I mean, that's something, I'm so sorry for your loss, but that's the last thing I guess you need too, is all of the bureaucracy around it when you're trying to get help. And that's so often the case, isn't it? Heather Evans, I mean, is Anne's story really common there, that when you actually do put your hand up and say, look, this is what's happening, or this is the support or the help that we need, that all of the hoops that you've got to jump through is just too tricky?
Before I answer that, Anne, I lost my husband in August, so I know how you're feeling, and I do offer you my prayers and my sympathy. Yeah. It's a very difficult time, isn't it? But I've always said about the DVA, the problem with it is you'll never get an answer because they don't tell you there's a question. Finding the question you need to ask is the hardest thing. Most people that you have a deal with on the phone, if you ring up, are genuinely compassionate and genuinely caring. But as I said, if you don't know there's even a question that needs to be asked, how can you possibly give the answer? It's a minefield. It's a minefield that, if you know the right thing to ask, you're fine. But in Anne's state, she wouldn't have been in any condition to even know what he was.
Only 2 months since he passed away, so it's really fresh. But there's a text here saying, sorry, what's DVA? This is the Department of Veterans Affairs, which is basically the federal government agency that deals with veterans. So what are people, is that a common complaint? I mean, of struggling to get nursing care at home, or are there other things that people are struggling with Department of Veterans Affairs?
Oh, there's always going to be expectations from someone ringing the DVA, and if you look at their website and you look at their information, you can generally find out whether they do provide something or not. But, you know, I had no trouble with my husband having nursing because we had Mercy Palliative Care, which was nothing to do with DVA. But I just think sometimes there's just not the proper information on the website, and you can be put from department to department, genuinely want to help you, but within their limits, and they're constrained by policy.
Yeah. And if people want to reach out to you, Heather, what's the best way if people want to actually maybe connect to someone from their partners of Veteran Association of Australia?
I'm available on the phone. I'm available on my email. I'd be more than happy to speak with people and listen to them.
Oh, you're a good woman. Well, people can reach out to you. Heather Evans, thank you so much for your time and our condolences too for the loss of your husband.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. And thanks for the opportunity to have a chat with you this morning.
Heather Evans is the National President of Partners of Veterans Association of Australia, and there are lots of support services available. So the major one in Australia, available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, is Lifeline on 13 11 14. Open Arms is for current and ex-serving Australian Defence personnel and their families when they need someone to talk to. That's 1800 011 046. And there is a Defence Member and Family Helpline, which is 1-800-624-608.
You're on The Conversation Hour. We're talking about the impact of war on partners and children of veterans. Has a loved one returned from a conflict, and how did it affect you? Lucas Moon is the president of the Hawthorn RSL, and we've spoken to you in the past, but you've called our talkback line. Lucas, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
What did you want to say?
Oh, great conversation. I just want to acknowledge that absolutely there is some impact on families out there. But I just want to sort of highlight that the health system or the care the veterans had since World War One through the repatch system was shut down and closed down in 2003-04. So this day and age, there's no veteran-specific care. It's broken between the state government and funded by the federal government, state government run. And for an example, if I've got a veteran who is acute to take them for 24 hours, 7 day a week care, I can't. It's outrageous. We talk about mental health in Victoria,
We actually had a caller earlier that said he sort of went into a general facility. It wasn't specific for veterans, and he actually thought it helped him. But, I mean, do you think that's got to be something that's more specific, and that since that facility has shut down, it's had a negative impact?
Well, the facilities do help certain individuals. I've visited many veterans in there. And it helps the wider family. I guess, in Victoria we had the Ward 17 at Heidelberg Repat. It devastates me when veterans have to wait 6 to 8 weeks to get in, and then we go there, there's empty beds, or there's truck drivers in there, or there's work cover cases because they pay a higher rate than DVA. It outrages veterans, and we wonder why we lose them to suicide and we lose some families. But saying that, one thing I do agree with, not all veterans are broken. Most veterans are high performers, and those that have a little wobble, if they get the right help, they're high performers in society, and which I would encourage veterans to getting that help.
And Lucas, just before you go, I just wanted to ask you, you're talking about that scenario where you might struggle to get care for a veteran because of the bureaucracy between the state and federal governments, but does any of it come under NDIS? Can you get any kind of nursing at home through the NDIS?
Well, the home care you can get later on. I guess the key point is when veterans are acute and having an episode, they may do harm to themselves or others when they're not thinking straight. There's no place in Victoria we can take those veterans 24/7. That is turned off. We do take them to Friends House or Dean Mile, the old head of the trade union, the ETU, runs a farm up at Trentham. We take veterans there, fully voluntary.
Yeah, gosh, I mean, there's so much into this. I mean, when you look at how we've only just started to recognise PTSD as well, and we are, waiting on the findings of the Royal Commission into veterans suicide. Lucas Moon, thanks so much for calling in. He is the RSL president of Hawthorn. But, I mean, there's so much that we're still learning, but quite often, Jono, you know, the system is broken when it comes to how easy access is. We do like to make it tricky, you know, whether, and of course that might be so that people don't take advantage, but at the same time, you can't make it hard for people to get the help that they need.
Yeah, I'm learning things even today from Lucas's call, talking about if someone is having an acute episode, that there is this bureaucracy, this kind of breakdown between the state and the federal systems. I thought it would be really smooth sailing, but obviously not. If you have experience here, though, if you've experienced the impact of war on a partner, on a child of yours, or a loved one has returned from a conflict and been affected by that conflict, Rish and I would love to hear from you. Diane Dempsey is author of When He Came Home, The Impact of War on Partners and Children of Veterans. Good morning, Diane. This is a huge problem, isn't it?
It is. It is. It intrigues me, really, that it's still a problem. We've known about it for quite a while now. You know, the light has dawned about the issue of PTSD, and it took a while for government. I mean, there's a phrase called government amnesia when it comes to the issue of PTSD and veterans. It was in play after the First World War when soldiers, were deeply affected, and they used to call it shell shock. And then the Second World War, it was dismissed as war trauma. Nothing was done about it. Everyone forgot about it. And Vietnam, you know, so it wasn't even considered that these young men would come back from Vietnam suffering. So nothing was done about it. So it's about 30 years, actually, historically. If we look at it historically, 30 years from that general period around the Vietnam War until the early 2000s, when it was the Vietnam veterans themselves who started to agitate for counselling and welfare services. And on the heel of that was, on the back of that, I mean, were the women who were the partners who were helping them. They started to get together in groups to help themselves and to also politicise the issue, which, along with the veterans. But still, now, here we are, 2020, it's still not
21.
Solved.
Feels like it's...
Don't worry, we all get confused as to what year it is. What I find incredible, though, Diane, because today's program is kind of inspired by your book, When He Came Home. And, you know, we all either know someone or have heard that phrase, you know, they came back a different person. And we've all got a degree of this impacting our lives. And you spent time with many people and many couples putting this book together. But there's one little bit here, and even this kind of resonated with me, and when I think about maybe some friends and family just even within my circle. And this is just a couple that you met, and this is Lorraine and Jeff. And it says, most of the women have given up trying to pressure their husbands into attending social functions or family gatherings. We usually fight before we go out anyway. So now we don't make any plans. Nobody calls us anymore, and we're just stuck with each other. Mm. And when you think about just the everyday impacts where partners, women or men, decide to give up. They go, you know what? Socialising is just too hard. We're going to fight. Mm. It's going to stress them out. It will be just a really terrible experience for everyone, so I won't bother. And then that has ramifications.
Mm. Well, it does. It has, they don't have a social life. The woman becomes extraordinarily lonely, and there's an impact on the children as well. They sort of live in a bubble of anxiety. That little family will live in a bubble of anxiety through no fault of their own, and the onus inevitably is on the partner to try and fix it all, to try and make everybody better. And I think, you know, the government owes a great deal of recognition to the partners of veterans, not only historically but in our contemporary situation as well. Because if they aren't, you know, we're talking about the services falling down, but they're still not adequate. I guess one of the reasons they haven't been sorted out is because the women are always there as a backstop. They're always there to pick up the pieces. And it's often 3 o'clock in the morning when there's a crisis, when you need the help. And, you know, there's lots of websites that promise you all sorts of wonderful services. but they're not going to be effective at 3 o'clock in the morning, and there's a whole lot of issues around that.
Yeah, well, I mean, the one that we keep coming back to is Lifeline, which is available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 13, 11, 14. I'm not sure about the other ones. I mean, we're talking about Open Arms, which is for current and ex-serving Australian Defence personnel, so 1800 011 046, and then Defence Member and Family Helpline, 1800 624 608. But you're right. I mean, it's really hard to get that kind of help, as you say, at 3 o'clock in the morning when someone you love is having an episode.
And there's a text here that says, hey, Tim, regarding veterans' mental health, and Open Arms recently changed the funding that they run through Medicare. This means that veterans receive less rebate and the same service when they see a psychologist compared to when they see a clinical psychologist. It is discrimination. So sort of looking at changing that, the help that people can get.
Yes. Mandy is in Ocean Grove. Good morning, Mandy. What's your story?
Guys, look, I just wanted to raise what I think is a whole generation. I'm a 65-year-old daughter of a soldier who fought on the Kokoda track. Now, he came home, but he didn't come home, if you see what I mean. He obviously, you know, as you've been saying earlier, we didn't know about PTSD. He came home, couldn't deal with family life or general life, drank himself to death before he was 50. And then I'm sort of that generation. I suffered all my life from depression, suicidal ideation, just thinking, you know, I was crazy. It wasn't until I got to, I'm one of the lucky ones, I got to see a psychologist who gave me a kid's book for children of Vietnam vets and said, take this home and see what you think.
And did that surprise you, Mandy? Had you ever made that connection before?
No, yeah. Not at all. And if anything, I told psychologists, like a, you know, a smart person that I was, I said, look, my problem is the absent father figure. And of course, many years down the track and lots of therapy, I realised that this was the constant problem in my life, was the constant presence of Dad, and that I'd never come to terms with the fact, you know, he'd been absent from all of my childhood. And I had to recognise in myself what I was suffering from, what the psychologist called was intergenerational trauma, and that, you know, I could have so easily repeated that pattern of alcoholism, suicide. But, you know, as I say, I'm one of the lucky ones. But I just think there's a whole generation out there, children of the veterans of World War II. We got nothing because nobody recognised what was going on.
Yeah.
And I just think of all those people that might not have been as lucky as me and didn't get the help they needed and didn't make it. You know?
It sounds like you've done pretty well in describing yourself, Mandy, as one of the lucky ones, Mandy, which is good. And that listening to Mandy speak too, it was reminding me of families of Vietnam veterans as well, because of course that was quite a fraught war, and the return of Vietnam veterans was quite fraught.
Diane Dempsey is with you as well, author of When He Came Home. There's a text here, and we actually discussed this off air as well, and tried to be as inclusive as possible. And it says, "Oh, hi there. The conversation all seems to be about male veterans. Is there any information on female veterans?" And that's something that we were really conscious of, but it's really tricky. I mean, is there much research here as to whether or not this affects women in a different way when they return from conflict, Diane?
Not that I know of. I have encountered a few women who've been affected, but in those two cases, the women were very quick to get help. They were very quick to recognise that they had PTSD, and very quick to get that recognition. So, you know, I think we were talking, I mean, it's that same old thing that the blokes might drag their feet a bit when it comes to looking after themselves. But I really can't talk much more than that on this particular subject, and that research didn't go that further. But, you know, I do recognise in the book too that the partners of veterans also include women, particularly in contemporary conflicts.
Brendan is in Benalla. G'day, Brendan.
Yeah, g'day, mate. How are you?
Good. You're a returned serviceman.
So look, I can't comment on any sort of in particular conflict, but what I can comment on is So I'm a 24-year-old ex combat medic, and I was very much the same as Brett, where my back and a couple of things fell out, and you know that was my sort of stellar career that I had created. Well and truly over with. Now, what I'm finding the struggle in the veteran world, especially in civilian world, is a failure of understanding of what we did. So not, you know, not as a sense of, hey, you know, you're a veteran. Yeah, that's a, that is a blanket term for us all, you know, lovely, thanks. But, yeah, you know, it comes down to as well, you know, the types of jobs that people were doing. You know, I can't speak for Brett, but it sounds as though that he was Ramey of some variety. So, you know, he was a mechanic or a tradie of some variety.
Yeah.
You know, his knees for him, they're blown out. You know, for me as a combat medic, to step into a battle space or a an area of operations at all, you know, there's a switch in my head that's being ingrained by Army to be able to inflict ultimate violence, but then also turn that switch immediately without thinking and then be there for my mates and enemy.
I always find it that it hits home when I speak to someone like yourself, Brendan, and you talk about the civilian world, because your working world and then your civilian world, they're two different worlds, aren't they? And they don't necessarily understand each other or get along with each other.
No, and... and you know, that's what I'm finding at the moment. Me and my family, you know, as a result of, a lot of things that I need to work through and together. But my, not, you know, not any of my children or anything, but my mum, dad and my brother, you know, we've had recently over sort of the last couple of months, you know, it's been getting rougher and there's more arguments. And then, yeah, just recently there was a dirty, great, massive blow up. That's resulted in, okay, now we have no idea what we're doing. Because we don't know, you know, can we live coherently together with me in the space that I am at the moment?
And do you feel like you know where to get help at the moment, Brendan?
Not a clue.
There
not
are
a clue, well, at all.
Again, I mean, we can do is give you numbers, and that sort of feels really trite as well to be able to give you those numbers. Have you got good mates and people that you can speak to? I mean, obviously, we'll give you those numbers again, people you can reach out to and keep listening, because we've got lots of people that have been in the same situation as you. But do you feel like you've at least got people around you to talk to and to keep an eye on you?
Yeah, I've got you know, my group that I brought in quite tight, and you know, a lot of guys that I was ex-army with as well, and other veterans. But yeah, it's getting a little bit hard.
Oh, good on you, Brendan. Thank you so much for telling your story, because it is really, really important to hear those stories. 24-year-old returned veteran Brendan from Benalla.
Let's give those numbers, even though, I mean, Brendan's listening. And look, you never know, the person on the other end. Brendan, you know, give them a call, because they might be able to point you in the right direction. They'll, you know, at least just be someone to listen to at the other end as well. Because sometimes you feel like you might be banging on about this a lot, and maybe people don't want to listen to you. And the thing is, there are people there that want to listen.
Yes, that's right. Lifeline 13 11 14. Open arms on 1800 011 046, which is for current and ex-serving ADF members, or personnel, I should say, and Defence Member and Family Helpline, which is 1800 624 608. Lots of texts on this one as well, Rish. This says, I came into community nursing to assist the elderly age in their home, especially DVA clients, so Department of Veterans Affairs clients. Sadly, once the government contracts ceased, our company is no longer able to see those clients. I really miss spending time with those clients and listening to their many stories. And Jan in Bendigo says, there are veterans programs for PTSD in the US around research-based meditation programs. In particular, transcendental meditation seems to be effective. Thank you for having your say, Jan.
Diane Dempsey, just finally, with all of the families and the partners and the veterans that you've spoken to, do you feel like we're heading in the right direction? I mean, when I hear Brendan, I just felt really hopeless and helpless, actually. And it's something that makes me feel quite uncomfortable that I'm not sure how to help him, because he's reaching out for help.
I think there's a whole huge coterie of people in our society who suffer because of the fact that we have an ADF, that they are involved in it, that we send them out, and then when they come home, they're not looked after properly. And the other point I'd like to make is that I think people sometimes are snobby about veterans, and to some degree they're ostracised. And that then carries over to the family of the veteran. It's like they can't talk proudly of what's happened to them. Not anymore. I mean, not since the Second World War, probably. Not since Vietnam was such a shocking war. And we all know that the Vietnam veterans suffered grievously from PTSD because they were ostracised when they came home, because they were made to feel ashamed. And I think there's still an echo of that attitude towards veterans and to young men like Brendan, who is not made to feel good. And I don't think that helps their welfare at all. And I think if you talk to someone like Heather, again, Heather Evans, the partner who's the president of Partners of Veterans, one of the things they're still pushing for is a white card for the partners, which, because a lot of them suffer from illnesses, particularly in terms of their mental health, where they need quite acute services and they cannot get those services, and they still argue for entitlements in terms of their health. So, yes, my response to you there, Rochelle, is that we've still got a long way to go, and I just think it's disgraceful. And I think if you talk to someone like Julianne Finney, his beautiful boy, David, took his own life after he was discharged from the Navy. And Julianne has been very active in setting up...
Yeah, we're speaking to her in just a moment. Yeah. So,
that's wonderful. Well, yeah. she will follow suit. There's nothing like a mother who's lost her child to make people concentrate. I'll tell you that.
Diane, it's an incredible book. Thanks so much for your time and for inspiring today's conversation. It's Diane Dempsey, the author of When He Came Home. And, Jono, there's just, for Brendan, who hopefully is still listening, there is a lot of love out there for you, mate. So please know that you were heard just then, and lots of people wanting to ensure that you look after yourself. So a lot of love and support and respect coming in for you.
This is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio.
We're talking about the impacts of war on partners and children of veterans and loved ones that return from conflict and how it affected you. This text: my husband's father fought with the German army in World War III. He was a very brave man, awarded high medal. He suffered PTSD last year. His last years were very sad. I see the effects that it's had on my husband even today in our late 60s in various ways. One is that he could not really honour his father's service. Joey's in Heathcote. Hi, Joey.
Yeah, g'day. This is really pressing a button of mine that's been bugging me for all my life. I'm 77 and born in 45. And I think there's a cohort of people like me, and I'm, because people are speaking about this stuff, I'm only just realising that this has been a part of my condition all my life, you know.
What connected, Joey? What things are you hearing that you think that's my story?
Well, my father was away, and he didn't actually even go overseas, but he was away because he was in the signals, and he'd just ride his motorbike up and down the coast of, and he was away, and I had a brother who was born before the war, and then I was born after the war. And my whole life was affected in so many ways. He was violent and cruel. And this was the father that I loved with my whole heart, you know. I was a wee child. I was only really small, and I could never work it out. And you know how when things happen, the adults will say, oh, no, it's all right, don't worry.
I know. That's why we had another caller earlier, Joey, saying the exact same thing that you said, which is actually all of a sudden I joined those dots. Joey, look after yourself, but thanks so much for calling us.
I have had mental illness all my life, so, you know.
Yeah, it might be all connected.
There's a lot of me around.
Yeah, there really are, Joey. There's lots of Joeys out there, absolutely.
That's true. And when you're listening, I mean, this particularly earlier when we were hearing about intergenerational trauma, and you wonder about, I mean, my granddad served in World War II, and this is exactly the same thing you're talking about, Rish. They said, you know, everyone in the family said he kind of came back very different to when he went away. And, you know, there's just so much trauma that is caused by that. Ruth Clare is the daughter of a Vietnam veteran and wrote the memoir Enemy. G'day, Ruth. Is any of this striking a chord for you today?
Oh, yeah. It always strikes a chord, and it's always one of those things that I've got to try and do a lot of breathing exercises so I don't just disintegrate again, going back to all of these memories that it all evokes. So I completely related to the last caller. Was it Joey?
Yeah.
You know, my first memory when I was 3 years old was of my dad hitting me, chasing me through the house, dragging me out so he could hit me more. And all of that was because I stuck a sticker on a wall. That experience of loving your dad and then having some days he's completely fine and loves you back, and then the next day you'll do the smallest thing and he'll hit you for that. And then the next day, if you do that same thing, he won't hit you for it because it hasn't activated whatever's going on for him psychologically. It's had a lifelong impact, and I tell you, COVID hasn't been kind.
I know. And you know what I find incredible, Ruth, and this is something that you've discovered as well, and, you know, that's why I think society, you know, must be so thankful for women like yourself and for other family members that have come out and started to look into this, because what surprised you was actually the absence, wasn't it, of literature on the impact of PTSD on families. And for people like Joey maybe today that have all of a sudden it's just clicked and they've made that connection and where to go to get help, to get assistance, to have reassurance that you're not alone, that it's not your fault, that support network hasn't really been there.
No, and it's the whole reason that, like, I could not find a book written from the perspective of being the child of a veteran. And I didn't, because my dad was conscripted, he wasn't like a, he didn't, you know, volunteer to go in and become, that was his career in the armed forces. It meant that I didn't have an identity of him as a veteran either. I just had an identity of my dad could be really dangerous, and I loved him, but I was terrified of him. And, you know, our whole life was spent just watching his mood, looking for the intake of his breath or whether or not his hand was clenched, and just trying to get the hell out of his way, or trying to change yourself all of the time related to how his mood was. And I didn't in any way understand that that was related to his war experience, because he didn't talk about it and he didn't go on marches. I didn't have that identity, so I had no context.
And this is the tragedy of it is, I guess as a child you would kind of blame yourself, wouldn't you, Ruth?
I mean, I think it's the most abiding thing is, I think, my ongoing doubt about myself as a human being. And, yeah, I spent the whole time thinking that he was cruel and violent to me because he didn't love me, and he was wanting to show me that I was unlovable. And no matter how hard I tried, that he, you know, that was the what I walked through as a child. I've had a lot of therapy, but it's still... Yeah. I so identify with your previous PTSD client because I have complex PTSD as a result of having had such a violent upbringing. Gosh. And it just goes on.
Well, it's as so a society, it feels like we're really just at the beginning of this. I mean, it is such a privilege to be able to have this conversation today at length and to speak to you, Ruth, and to have people like Brendan call in, people like Joey call in, and share those stories. Because as uncomfortable as this is, like every hair on my body is standing on its end at the moment listening to your story, Ruth. It doesn't make any of us feel comfortable listening to that, but we've got to talk about it, don't we? We have to normalise it, and we have to make change and ensure that that support is there.
Because the one of the other reasons, like, I don't know if you know Brené Brown, but I love a bit of Brené Brown, and she wrote this whole thing about what shame is. And I think for me, the experience of a lot of veterans returning, there was a lot of shame around the Vietnam War, and so they just shoved it all down and didn't talk about it, and then it got inside and festered. And then the same for me, growing up in a home, you know, with violence. My mum was an alcoholic as a result of the trauma that she was experiencing. It was not one of the, like, you weren't walking around proudly talking about your family. It was one of those things you thought, I've got to keep all this to myself. And no one knew about it. No one knew what I was going through. I was a very good student. I was school captain of my primary school. I was doing everything in my power so no one would discover it. But that whole thing about shame, the stigma around talking about this stuff, it's why I will continue to talk about it until I die, is because I want other people to know that they are not alone.
Yeah. Beautifully and more said. Power to you, Ruth, because, yeah, your story is so, so important for other people to hear. And I'm glad we've got to a point where we can have these conversations. Ruth, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ruth.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Ruth Clare, daughter of Vietnam veteran, and she's written the memoir Enemy, and very, very strong in telling her story. And it, look, for me, Rish, as well, this is, I'm thinking about intergenerational trauma. Mm. Listening to all these incredible stories, I'm thinking about intergenerational trauma in our family and what that, what that has meant.
Absolutely. You start to look at yourself, your cousins, your family, your friends, and like Joey earlier, you just go, oh, that's me, or that's my family, or they're talking about what we've seen and what we've been through. Julianne Finney has been very open and spoken a lot, and rightly so. Julianne lost her son David, who was suffering from PTSD. He was discharged from the Navy back in 2017, but took his own life. Julianne, welcome to the Conversation Hour. Again, as we always say, we are so sorry for your loss. We cannot imagine what you've been through. What needs to change? You know, what needs to change? At the moment, from everyone that we've spoken to today, it just feels like we need a hell of a lot more support, and really good support.
Absolutely. So I think that the first thing that we need to do is listen when people say they need help. It's very real. But from there, I'm almost believing, after having been in this space for a few years now, that things just need to be broken down and built back up. When my son first passed away, the only thing that I was ever offered, and to this day remains the only thing that I was ever offered, was the phone number to Open Arms. Open Arms are, you know, I wouldn't send veterans there. I've heard a few good stories, but very few. We need people who want to help, not who appear to be on the phone. Oh, no, here's another one.
And, Julianne, that's why I feel so futile when I offer these numbers.
Know.
You know, I'll read out these numbers and I feel like there's got to be more that we can do for this.
There has to be. I say to people, I have literally thousands of unread messages. People contact me for help because they think I can help them with their child who's about to suicide, or they think that I can help them with what to do. I say, you know, like, I failed with stopping my son, and I am not a psychologist.
You didn't fail. You're not a failure at all.
Sorry, okay, but it did happen. And we need to be, because it's happening so often, like I said, I think we need a real breakdown of what we are offering and then build it back up.
Is the Royal Commission going to help, do you think? Like, is this something that fills you with any confidence that change will occur?
It will help if veterans and their families put in their submissions and make the commissioners dig deep. There's still a little bit of control over it, but we can stop that. We can make these commissioners dig deep, but it takes everybody who's ever experienced or been the family or loved one of someone who's experienced suicidal ideation or attempt or suicide.
Yeah. Julianne, what do you want to come out of that Royal Commission? If in a perfect world, if you could make all the decisions, what do you want to come out of it?
I want accountability in defence, so that they change their culture, so that when we put our children through to this wonderful career, and it is, and we're so proud of serving people, but we remember their human rights and we help them. I actually now want defence to stop discharging medically discharging veterans and keep them until they fix the problem.
Julianne, as always, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
That's Julianne Finney, who lost her son David just only a few years ago. And I guess the other thing too, Jono, that really pushes through here that we've found that people want is actually more peer-to-peer support. You know, you don't want that government department on the other end where somebody's ticking the boxes. You want someone that really understands what you're going through.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, when we were talking to Brendan earlier, so many people on the text line have got in touch and said, Brendan needs to know about Young Veterans, which is a group of, as the name suggests, young veterans. And you can find out more information, www.youngveterans.com.au. But also just on the Royal Commission as well, into veteran suicide. So public hearings begin at the end of this month, but you can also apply for a private session, or you can make a written submission to that Royal Commission into veteran suicide. So all you need to do is go to defenceveteransuicide.royalcommission.com. www.gov.au, which is really important. As Julianne was saying there, it's really important that they hear these stories.
And I know we said we feels like it's just sort of hopeless giving out these numbers, but one number that you should always have saved in your phone and one number that works and that is there around the clock, and we give it up many times, is Lifeline, which is 13 11 14. Save it in your phone. Just, you never know when you might need it. That number is there for you. And there's also the suicide callback service, and you can call them on 1300 659 467. I remember when we started the Conversation Hour, we actually looked into this for an entire program as well. So we've done multiple programs on this, Jono. Yep. So you can just go back through the Conversation Hour feed, subscribe to the Conversation Hour podcast. And I just want to say a huge thank you to everybody that rang today. That was really uncomfortable listening, but was so important. My
I'm
God.
I'm always so grateful to people who call and tell their story on radio. For stories like that to come out, I mean, it's next level brave. So thank you to everyone who has called through, particularly people like Joey and Brendan and all of our callers today have just been amazing. But we have done a program as well on PTSD, which I was thinking about as the program progressed today, which you can look back and find. You just search through the archives.
And if just look out for each other as well. You know, if today you're thinking, oh, that reminds me of what my friend or my cousin or my family member or my dad or my sibling or whatnot, just talk to each other and look out for each other.